Into the Nexus is a production of amove.tv. Bookmark Amove TV for other great video games and esports podcasts. Into the Nexus is sponsored by listeners like you via patreon.com/ITN. Greetings and welcome back, everyone. This is Into the Nexus, the podcast all about Heroes of the Storm. I'm Garrett Weinzierl, and he's Kyle Ferguson. Welcome back, Kyle. You had Team League over the weekend, and I'm jealous.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry you couldn't make it, but yeah, you were busy with house stuff. We'll get you another time. It was an enlightening weekend for a lot of people. We had a really good time. We messed up the draft a lot. The exact problem I said was going to happen at the end of last episode did end up happening. I had two secret agents, and at one point we did end up drafting Murky and Samudo at the same time, which means we had fantastic map presence and Merc ability, but no real way to win any of the team fights.
Not to sound like a jerk, but isn't that your guys' fault?
Totally. But you know, it's really cool environment. I really enjoy it. I love party management games, and this is definitely one of those cases. It's human resources, as boring and, you know, business of a word as that is, figuring out who can do what for me in the comps and what I can expect of different people. One of the things, you know, I'm reaching out to other people. I'm trying to grow the Team League show, invite more and more shows on. And when I talk to people, I'll be like, hey, what league are you currently in? And their first reaction is, oh, don't judge me by that. I'm in Silver League, but that doesn't count. I just don't have much time to grind. And that doesn't really affect my decision to have them on the show. It just affects what I can ask of you, what I know you are capable of, what I know you have experienced. That's the biggest one. So one of the errors we made in one of the games was I took Kristen and I put her on Vala into double tank. And that's not a very complicated issue when you get to the higher levels till you get to 16, where you have that really amazing giant killer on Vala.
Yeah.
But we had to get all the way to 16. And before that, I had Diamond League expectations of her circumventing the tanks and being kind of squirrely, kind of doing that Jaina business where you don't have a lot of movement speed, but you're still able to kind of sneak around and poke the back line and avoid hitting the tanks in front. The tanks we were fighting into were ETC and Dahaka. So they just kept regenerating. She was stuck in the front line, and we weren't able to pull it off. It was a really good Sky Temple, though. Absolutely, you guys should check out the VODs. But those sort of odd little limitations kept us back, and it was a really cool experience.
Well, cool, man. Well, I'm still sad I missed it, and I look forward to it.
Missed you, man. We didn't really think about it much, but Kael'thas, your Kael'thas, destroys Team League. And
thank you.
We thought about it. And we're thinking, man, you know, our first week, sure, maybe we were in the earlier places of placements. Maybe it was still figuring out our collective MMRs. But something we realized was the death balls in Team League are so tight, so on top of each other, one stun after another, just balled up. That Kael'thas actually just wrecked in Team League because everyone's so chummy. But when you get into solo queue, everyone's so out for themselves that Kael'thas actually fails a bit nowadays because people watch out for living bombs. If you're going to die to a pyroblast, good, get the heck away from me. Like, everyone just knows to survive. But in Team League, everyone's going, no, that's my actual friend. Save him. Oh, I passed the bomb.
Well, it makes me feel good, Kyle. Thank you. Thank you for raining down love. I think you're maybe loving Kael'thas a little more than me, and that's fine. But I'm still gonna take it. I'm going to take it as a compliment. But
You should. I look forward to having you back on there.
Yeah. And also, it doesn't look like I'll be waiting too long to get back in the Team League, although it'll be with random folks here listening right now because we're going to have another Team League event. We did one last season right before it ended, and we'll be doing one again early on into December before this season ends. So if you're interested, because people have been tweeting at us wondering when it's going to be happening, Friday, December 9th, starting at 10 p.m. Eastern time. We will be doing a live stream and pulling in random ITNers into our team and playing some Team League games.
Yes. So great way to complete some of that Nexus challenge. But also, as you all may know, going into Team League and completing your placements means you are guaranteed the base version of the special mount.
Indeed.
Regardless of where you place.
And it is probably important for us to mention that last time we actually streamed all 10 games. And if you did watch that, you probably remembered watching me start coherent and a member of human society and then ending it just a babbling, barely functioning mass of meat.
Around 2 a.m., I think it was.
Yeah. At around 2 a.m., my internal clock said, "Hey, dude, you're not 19 anymore.
I'm out.
I'm done." So we're only going to be streaming. We'll be streaming up to five games at the most. If they go super quick, we'll do more than five games. However, that doesn't mean the party needs to end. We will be in the Amove TV chat channel all night, as well as a bunch of other Into the Nexus listeners. So just because we end the stream and my old butt goes to bed doesn't mean that you all can't keep forming those teams and completing all 10 placements to get yourself that sweet mount.
Not at all. And of course, you know, at least, right? I mean, you never know when the fifth game is going to be a horrible loss and then you have to stick around for another. That's just the nature of video gaming. That'll be happening, that stream, 10 p.m. on the 9th, Friday, December. Start before then. Jump in there. Get together. Do your team leagues. I'll certainly be palling around too. Maybe I'll jump in your team league. Just keep spamming in that chat. Let's fill up Team League. And of course, if you didn't make our team for the event, queue. Because one of the most awesome things about last time was that everyone in Amove was queuing at the same time at us. And I'd say a good third of our games were against fellow Amovers.
Yeah, which I loved. And it was a blast. And it was also cool, even when that didn't happen, to pop out and see the chatter happening in Amove chat of what they went up against, how they were doing. And it was just a lot of fun. And if you've never been in the Amove TV chat, it's or any custom chat channels for that matter, there are custom chat channels in Heroes of the Storm. Not everyone uses them. It's very simple. You type /join Amove TV. So AMOVE TV, and you'll be in the Amove chat room. There's always, you know, folks hanging out in there. But on Team League night, it's quite the lively place. So get in there, make a team, have fun, and maybe we'll fight you, maybe we'll fight alongside you, but we're definitely gonna have a good time one way or the other.
That chat right now is just full of people blitzing their AIs. It's been very exciting to see the number of people who have stuck around. Maybe they did their AIs, they went back to Overwatch, and they go, "Oh, something's missing. I think I might like Heroes. Oh my goodness."
Yeah,
I was actually looking at the Google Trends last night, comparing what sort of search results that Heroes has been gathering recently, and it's peaking. It's kind of cool to see. Interesting strategy, Blizzard. You took Overwatch and you said, "Let's give this MOBA-like elements so people burnt out on League of Legends could say, ah, finally, let's play something else for a while." And then you sneak it back on in.
It's cool, right? Like, the Blizzard's in an extremely unique position. I mean, what other you know, studio out there has so many competitive titles that they can do this type of cross-game promotion?
Well, and it works so perfectly with Overwatch. At first, it didn't seem right, but it's real-time, it's character-based, and objective-based. And World of Warcraft people, I think, are going to get overwhelmed. I think you could do some really sort of cute only card available, kind of like the ETC card in Hearthstone. But really, would Hearthstone people enjoy Heroes of the Storm? Maybe not. It's probably a pretty big jump for them. But the Overwatch, there's a connection there.
Yeah, it's, you know, much more similar in the dexterity required to play the game. Let's put it that way. So, also, patrons, are you listening? Are you over at patreon.com/ITN supporting Into the Nexus? Are you one of our 300 plus bosses? Well, our next patron hangout is next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So if you've never done one of those before, it's via Skype. There's a post over on patreon.com/ITN right now. If you are a $1 or above patron, you can see that. And it has all of the information as far as the Skype account that you should add, a voicemail line that you can call if you can't make the live show. And yeah, as always, feel free to comment on that. Leave a text question if you don't want to leave a voicemail and you can't call in live. So plenty of ways to join the conversation for our patron hangouts over at patreon.com/ITN. That'll be happening again next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern. Now, Kyle, just because we're coming to you one day earlier than usual to make room for Thanksgiving festivities does not mean we have any fewer amount of things to run down in this week's Heroes of the Storm news. So let's get to it.
We're on, boys. Let's liven up this place.
Point me to the stage.
Stay a while and listen.
First up this week, the lead live designer on Team One, Matt Cooper, got on the horn and explained everything that is going on right now with damage mitigation and vulnerability, and it's quite a bit, actually. Apparently, as of the Varian patch, they have changed how vulnerable and the damage mitigation system works in Heroes of the Storm.
Whoops. Oh, it was live for a couple days, and then they sweep in with this. But I'm glad. I really like the system, actually.
Yeah. They said that the overarching goal was to determine how much damage a unit should take based off of buffs and debuffs applied. Yeah, you're right. This didn't go out preemptively or even simultaneously with the patch. This came afterwards.
Though
a rare miss.
Something. This may be simple yet complex. It's just better to just kind of go, hey, guys, it's already live. And if you didn't notice it, well, then that's even better because it's working as intended.
I muted myself. Go me. That being said, even though it did come after it went live, Matt Cooper did dive deep into exactly what was happening. So first he gave an example of how it used to work. So if you're not aware of it, this is how it used to work. He said, previously when we looked at how much damage a target was going to take, they would look to see if there were any buffs or debuffs that would modify the damage. That being that the single biggest damage mitigation buff, like Hardened Shield, and the single biggest damage mitigation debuff, Vulnerable, are compared, and the difference between those two things are the result. And the example he gave was that Hardened Shields grants plus 75% damage mitigation and Vulnerable applies damage you take by plus 25%. So the net result is a 50% damage mitigation. You're literally just subtracting the 25% of Vulnerable from the 75% of Hardened Shield and landing on 50%. So they said, in this system, it didn't matter. It didn't matter if you had Safeguard from Lieutenant Morales. It didn't matter if you had Spell Shield and Hardened Shield, because they didn't stack. It was just Hardened Shield is the largest. That's the buff that the system uses. So because of that, there was no need to implement a cap. The maximum they said in either direction was simply the biggest buff and debuff available to players. That has all been changed now. Do you understand that? Cool. It's useless now. Now what it is they look at how much damage a target is going to take. They sum all of the damage mitigation buffs against the sum of all of the damage mitigation debuffs. So they gave an example with one buff, and if it's one buff and one debuff, the system is the same. Nothing changes. But if you start to stack things, that's where it gets more complicated. They said if you have Hardened Shield and two sources of Vulnerable, like Sylvanas and Jaina, for example, then the system will essentially take the 75% buff and subtract both of the 25% Vulnerable effects for a total damage mitigation of 25%. So those Vulnerable effects now stack.
I'm very happy this is addition.
Yes.
And not multiplication. This is very elegant. It does kind of leave our slows and stuns in a weird place. I'm curious to know if those will be changed to be similar. I'm not sure I want them to be, of course, but
yeah, I'm not sure either, but it seems like you're going down the road of consistency, right? Like if this is how this works, you would think your mind would fall into the trap of thinking that's how everything works.
Right now, this is very cool. I really like this. What I don't want to live in is our previous world where you can make more mistakes. Arthas pops his Hardened Shield. Then Morales comes in with the safeguard and does nothing because it's superior. But when we're talking about slows right now, if you get hit by a Jaina Frostbolt and then you run into Fort Range and maybe die like some players might have last night in the esports event, those do not stack. The slow on the fort is superior at 50%. The Frostbolt would be overridden.
Yeah. So all that being said, there is now a cap as well. They had to implement a cap because now multiple buffs and debuffs stack additively. The cap is set to 75% on the damage reduction side and 25% on the damage amplification side. So keep that in mind. And they also kind of took a look at the future. They explained why exactly they are exploring this. They said that they are looking at giving some damage mitigation baseline to a handful of heroes, mostly warriors. And they said that one of the challenges with the old system was that any baseline damage mitigation your character started with would have no impact whenever you received a temporary damage mitigation. And they even went and gave an example, and to make me pay even more attention, they used Arthas as the example, and said that Arthas, who has plus 15% damage mitigation all the time, would only receive an additional 10% when buffed with Safeguard from Lieutenant Morales. And they said that, it just didn't feel right, that these buffs were essentially less impactful on tanks than other heroes. So that in this new system, Arthas will get the benefit of both his baseline plus 15% and the plus 25% granted to him by Safeguard, which gives him an effective temporary buff of 40%, which
I love. So you just blazed through a lot of information. Let's back up a step here. So the caps. The caps are set at Hardened Shield, but if vulnerability hits you, it can take you below the 75%, and in that case, a safeguard can come in, putting you back up to the total.
Correct.
The maximum damage amplification you can take is 25%, meaning if you are vulnerable and have no other buffs or debuffs, you are at the maximum. But if you get a safeguard at 25, then get vulnerable from Sylvanas, and then vulnerable from Jaina, you are back up to a maximum amplification of 25%.
And
they go on to say that they're thinking about giving a lot of warriors a base damage mitigation in the future. And this is to prep for that eventual update.
Yep.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an elegant system, right? I mean, an easy question to ask yourself is, am I at 75% on damage reduction? Cool. Or, am I vulnerable and nothing else? Okay, I need to react. But then if anything else is happening, if you're ever below 75% on damage reduction, or if you're ever, capped at damage amplification at 25%, there's anything else that is done to you to either bring it below that, it still affects it, right? Like you said, now if you pop Hardened Shield and something reduces it and a Morales comes in and wants to help you, she actually can help you.
And well done by Matt Cooper here, being like, by the way, this affects supports and we're aware of it.
Yes. Yeah. They mentioned that as well, that they want to look at the amount of healing that support characters can dish out. They don't want to reduce healing drastically, but they said that, in the future, when they implement these changes to warriors, that giving them this damage mitigation baseline will allow them to reduce healing without making warriors less survivable. But he also did point out that, yes, this does mean healing would be slightly less impactful on targets with no baseline damage mitigation, which I'm kind of excited about.
Yeah.
It gives them more dials, right? This gives them more things to tweak, which I think is good in the long run. It's hard for me to really find a negative. Because even if this comes out and it's unsuccessful, well, fine. They have more factors now that they can play around with in service of balance.
As long as they can keep it consistent, that's the tough part. When you get into armor, which was in Warcraft 3, was part of Dota, it's so messy. This guy has 4 armor, which equals a 2% damage mitigation, but this guy's got 17 armor because he's a tank, and that's a lot more damage mitigation. But then this tank alongside him has 14 and 13, and it was a way to balance, but it just got messy, particularly when you're dealing with auto attackers, of course, that armor actually affected. If they can avoid those things, if we can avoid making a certain warrior 14 and another 15, I'm extremely pleased with the future here. And as a Diablo player, I'm really stoked because baseline damage mitigation would fix so many issues with his kit, which is basically he just doesn't have shielding. He doesn't have anything he can give himself to weather a storm.
Yeah. So I'm overall happy about this. I didn't really think about it. The concern of consistency, like you were saying, and that you've mentioned it. Now I am sharing your concern. So thank you for that, Kyle. But
you're welcome.
But it's a good point, right? It's another thing we'll have to memorize if the baseline mitigation across tanks is not the same.
And it's a game of information. Something's running at you in the lane. You need to know exactly what it can do. And really understanding a character and being good at them, particularly in the damage sense, knows it's about knowing when you can actually blow them away. When you're really talking burst, that's when it's really important. I'm going to whittle them down with these side spells, but then my ultimate's going to come in and wipe them out. So it will be a big feeling change, certainly with when these heals go live. It's why we have the strategy section today based on talents. And it's going to go over something a little bit like these damage mitigation, but certainly the vulnerabilities you need to watch out for in the field.
Yeah. Now, Matt Cooper didn't really give a timeline on when to expect to see some of these warrior changes in the future, but I would assume it's coming soon, right? Usually when they talk about this, these type of things openly, we see it on the PTR soon after.
Right. And Rag is set to come out on the 12th, I've heard. That's a Monday, second Monday in December. And we would expect the PTR for him to go up on the 5th because Blizzard is human too, and they're probably going to take some holidays, particularly after BlizzCon. So will we see that with the Artanis and Dahaka update that is set to come out with Rag as well? That would surprise me, honestly. I think when we interviewed the devs at BlizzCon, they seemed like they may need to go back to the drawing board a little bit on Dahaka after his esports performance.
Yeah, I don't know. But if this, you're right. I mean, it makes sense. If holidays are coming up, I would be surprised if they implemented a change like that before they most likely have a large section of their staff taking a break in the office for that holiday. But at the same time, if the entire point of this change was to make way for the warrior tweak coming up, I don't know. It could go either way. So
it'd be the perfect time to split the warriors finally into bruisers and warriors.
I would love to see that.
Because we just say, these guys have resistance, these guys don't. Does Artanis really need resistance? Do you need an opportunity to make more mistakes by attacking Artanis? I say no.
That's a very good point. Very good point. So I don't know. I guess we'll have to see. And don't worry, Kyle. And after all of that, when we have the split between tanks and warriors, there'll still be Varian in his own little special snowflake corner saying, I'm the monkey wrench.
Hey, that's fine. The hybrid list now involves Monk as well. You got Zarya, you got Tyrande, Tassadar, looking like he's going to be doing more damage very soon. It's getting up to be a full area.
Yeah. Well, shall we move on and talk about tier lists just in time for Christmas?
Let's do that, because we are about to go on holiday here. It's important for those of you playing over this weekend to understand what the current groove is and the feelings around certain heroes.
Yeah. What we are going to be talking about today is kind of an amalgamation of 10-ton hammer, Heroes Counter, Grubby, McIntyre, and Shrey's tier list. There are even more around the web if you want to go and find them. We have links to all the ones I just rattled off in the show notes at emove.tv/ITN. But these aren't hard to find. Definitely go and look them over. We're going to be kind of talking about them with a much wider brush. And definitely the consistencies between the lists. Like, for example, Vala is the most powerful assassin by everybody's opinion, pretty much.
Pretty much. The only one it didn't make, which was the 10-ton hammer list, is more of a research or fan article. So it's interesting to see what pro players took, then what the community voted for on Heroes Counter, and then what maybe more casual casters like Grubby, and not so much thinking win-win-win pro player, has taken into the top. But Vala did make everything. You've heard this from us before. Vala's super powerful right now. Duo queue it up while it lasts.
Yeah. Best tank it's pretty much Murden. He made the top of every single list we mentioned. Should also come, I don't think, as a surprise to anyone. Nor should Malfurion making the top of the list in the support slot for every list we just mentioned.
No, no. And Maltherian's still going. And with Sammy in the world, with Varian around, Maltherian's getting through most drafts right now. So pick him up nice and early. Everyone's going to like him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then as far as most powerful specialist, Sylvanas is the common thread there. The only list she didn't make the top of was McIntyre, but when you go and look at McIntyre's list, he actually explains. He considers tier one heroes that win the fight for the team without a real team. And so I get that. I understand why he wouldn't put Sylvanas in that category, because I don't think she really belongs there either. But that's the interesting thing with these tier lists, right? If someone wants to kind of come up with their own explanation of how they categorize heroes in their head, that's totally fine as long as they explain it.
And that's why I really like McIntyre's and Sray's list. They really went out of their way to make these solo based for your own individual play. Yeah. And taking into account how big of an impact you have alone on the team fight. And that's why Vala is so high up, because she can 1v1 almost anybody. Sylvanas does deserve to be a step lower, because you just got to consider the map. And there are a lot of really powerful Sylvanas maps right now. But you just need to skip a couple. Sky Temple. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's
fine. And then you wrote as honorable mention, other heroes that were among the top across multiple lists. We had, you know, heroes like Brightwing, Varian, ETC, Dahaka, Li Ming, Chen, and Zeratul. So I just rambled those off, you know, also considering Vala, Murd, and Malfurion, and Sylvanas. Are there any heroes here that you feel you should give like a little asterisk, like a caveat to, of this probably isn't the best thing to take if you're solo queuing?
Here an honorable mention, it's funny that Varian actually showed up on the community and the casual tier lists. So for those of you playing at home, we're all feeling the stuns of Warbringer at level 4. We're all feeling the stickiness of the death ball that has a Varian in it and just keeps coming every 6 seconds. Pros don't think he's a big deal at the moment.
Yeah, if you go the Fury build, like for me, the way I look at him, he's just strong, but he's easy to play. And I think that's why the us common folk, I consider myself among them. I think that's why we have issues with him, right? It's because just about anyone can pick him up and be effective. Whereas I don't think anyone can pick up Vala and be effective. There's a lot of nuance to Vala.
And I think he encourages a forward momentum play style that's very easy when you're winning. And you're going to feel like when you're losing that there's nothing you can do and there's nothing you're doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrael has a higher win rate than Varian. And that is on the simple fact right now. Varian's new, of course, but Varian has forward momentum. Tyrael can get himself out if he goes too deep with his movement speed, with that Elrune's Might throw. Varian just gets stuck. And we saw that again in the team league this weekend. Our bruiser made engages before the tank arrived and ended up exploding quite fast. And I expect that's the majority of the Varian experiences out there.
Hmm. I played quite a few games yesterday, just in quick match with Varian, just, you know, playing around, having fun with our buddy Smith. And I died a ton. I was not playing well. I was just getting just wrecked. I kept going up against Vala Samoro comps.
Ooh.
And we won, but it had nothing to do with me on Varian. So he can absolutely just get countered hard. And I'm not saying that I'm amazing Varian and only reason I lost was because of hard counter, but still, there's absolutely ways to deal with him. He is strong, but I wouldn't.
Parry is a little more powerful against your everyday auto attacks, maybe even some Rainer here and there, maybe some Hammer. But when you get to Vala and Sammy, they're just waiting for you. They just keep coming and they're too fast.
Yep. They get excited when they see a Varian.
Chen, of course, made quite a few of these lists. Dahaka only making one list, and that was McIntyre's, which is kind of interesting. I think Dahaka absolutely deserves his honorable mention, even if he wasn't noted by all the others.
I'd agree with you. And I've still been seeing so much of him. It felt like a spike after BlizzCon, and it really hasn't gone away as far as I'm concerned.
No, he's very powerful, particularly on those maps where there are split objectives, Dragon Knight, Sky Temple, Warhead Junction.
Yeah. Well, any closing thoughts on the tier list? Is there one you like the most? I think I'm with you. I think McIntyre and Shreys are my favorite because they're aimed at, you know, solo queuing, at going into Hero League alone, and almost even looking at these heroes in a vacuum.
They're very focused. I was surprised to not see Tychus, Falstad kind of floating around. My two big stables at the moment. If I can't get one, I just dive for the other, and I usually get them at the moment anyway. We'll see how that last Tychus is still getting lost on me. Zeratul was an interesting one, and he always comes up in these tier lists every single time. And when you ask pro players, what heroes should I use to get to Masters, a good majority of them will tell you to do Zeratul.
Yeah, but I mean, again, like it's not a hero I would recommend to everyone, depending on their playstyle or their, you know, just their comfort level. He's not a hero for everyone.
No, but he does have that level of effect on the battlefield of a Mighty Gust. Being able to put a building inside your Void Prison, being able to turn off the healers while you burn down the front line are all really powerful things. This just makes me fearful, right? I'm in a world right now where Brightwings and Muradins are everywhere, and I have no idea what their skill level is. I would say the majority of my typed compliments go to Brightwings right now because they get first pick, and I just freak out. But then they end up being actually pretty good. But the Muradins, and then you have Zeratuls that are also leaking into my league right now, and they're bad. They're bad Zeratuls. But he also just got a rework, so people seem happy with it. I really like the Zeratul rework because it allows for stockpiling abilities, not so much twitch control.
I haven't been drawn back to him. I mean, I played him quite a bit way back when, like pre-Void Prison change.
Then you will suffer, sir, because that Void Prison...
Oh, I'm very aware. This is not me saying I should get back to him, and I think I'll be prepared because that change, you know, totally didn't change everything. I'm very aware of the effect that that change had on Zeratul, but...
Well, previous Zeratul was more like playing, I mean, even a harder version of Tyrael. You're constantly thinking about how I can maneuver, who am I going to boost, where am I going to fly in a moment. Now with the current Zeratul, you don't have to be as concerned about things like Vorpal Blade. You don't really need to be as twitchy with Wormhole. You can instead take Slip into the Shadows, which gives you two charges of blink, which just makes the world so much easier because you know you can blink into something and you got to blink out.
Right.
And there's a way to build Zeratul right now with follow through too, something that you're very used to if you play Sonya, Rainer. Or does Rainer still have it? No, not anymore.
I use it on Thrall a lot.
Yeah, you got focus attacks. Thrall has it too. That's a skill you can translate immediately over to Zeratul. And I think the new Zeratul could fit your playstyle.
Okay. Well, maybe I should get back in there. I'm just enjoying Varian too much right now.
Sure.
Well, let's talk about changes coming to the MVP screen, because it sounds like they are. According to Blizz Travis, he said that they're making a few changes. The exit button is changing to a skip button that will take you away from the MVP screen to the voting screen. So if you don't want to watch the initial sequence, you can just bypass it without having to completely leave the match. You can then exit out of the voting screen early if you want. He said that the tab screen is going to be accessible while in the MVP and voting sections.
Sweet.
That's cool. I'm actually really happy about that one. Chat message notifications when someone leaves the game while in the MVP sequence are coming. And they're trying to find a good balance between enabling and encouraging people to vote without being heavy-handed about it, which I appreciate. Because this whole thing is just, you know, it's just a nice touch. It doesn't need to be required.
No, but I am sticking around to vote just in case. You never know.
Just never know what?
It may be an achievement for voting 100 times at the end of the season that you don't know about. There may be a category on your player profile in game that says how many votes you received in different roles.
Yeah.
Just watch it out.
I would only be concerned, you know, if that comes and then it's like retroactive. I'm sure if it is an achievement that they would inform us of it.
Sure. Maybe. I don't know. They're sneaky.
All right. Anyways, but Travis did say that, you know, if you are on tilt after a bad game, the last thing that they want to do is to force you to sit through a sequence that's calling out how well the other team did. And I appreciate that.
Cool. Theme song. Make it happen.
Get a theme
song. I don't
want
to hear Tracer. I don't want to hear Overkill on Tychus for 30 seconds straight. Or that buzz, that just the windiness of the exploded core. It's time, guys. You know, you got your rock solo. Okay, cool. I really like what they did with the Stormwind cover where they do the the monk sing, but they did like a guitar and they're like, it was sweet. Give us that. Give us maybe the actual music of the map, the best part of it. Something.
I just want
jazz it up.
I want more Kyle doing guitar impressions. That's what I want. They should just hire you so we get a little bit of
I'll do the song. I'll do the song. It'll be perfect.
Yeah, I would still like the music of Heroes overall to just be revisited. Need something a little more iconic. But anyways, before we move into strategy, let's thank our patrons, Kyle. There are many of you over at patreon.com/ITN right now supporting this very podcast, and many more of you out there just listening to the podcast, and that's fine. Into the Next is always going to come to you every week. It's going to be free. We're never going to put it behind a paywall. But we do appreciate those of you who go out of your way to support us. And on this episode, we wanted to thank the following patrons. Thank you to Lantern. Thank you to Spiff J Bug. Thank you to Bill G, Jim W, Relics, no last initial given, Gary I, BlizzArmy.com. Oh, BlizzArmy. Had fun seeing you at BlizzCon, sir. And Scott W. Thank you all so much for supporting the show. And if you're out there and you want to support us, patreon.com/ITN is the best way to do so. So go and check that out. We got some perks, got a patron hangout episode coming up. Looking forward to talking with many of you. Now, let's get into strategy.
Choose a talent.
Choose a talent.
Talent? Ah, that seems generous.
Impressive work, hero. I think you're ready for more.
So for today's strategy talk, Kyle, you had the idea of discussing watching out, being aware of power spikes, and specifically at what levels to be concerned about them, and not just for heroes you're playing against, but heroes you're fighting alongside.
And we're going to completely ignore level 10s for this, because guess what? People hit 10, they get a whole nother ability, they become more powerful. We're also going to ignore overdrives. We're going to ignore chromey talents. Like, really, when you get down to it, oh no, it hit harder than I thought. Well, you know, you were hit by the dragon breath in the first place. That was the initial problem anyway. Could you dodge it? Maybe not, given your position, given the octograb that you're currently sitting in. So I'm not concerned about those sort of actual power spikes. What I really want to talk about is things in the talents on certain characters that will throw you for a loop, that'll cause you to make an error. And more importantly, it might cause you to say, there's nothing I could do. And you know what? You can't say it, because it's not true. There was the 10 seconds before that bush you walked into that you could have done something about, as in not walking into that bush, face checking it as a squishy, perhaps. So with positioning in mind, with ignoring the heroics, with, of course, that ability does X amount more damage when they take this talent. Let's talk about some talents that can mess you up. And let's start nice and early, level 4. Only really two heroes here at the level 4 that have a bit of a power spike. Varian's Warbringer.
Yep.
The charge stun. You gotta watch for it. Check 4. If you don't know, this is when he gets the stun put on his little charge. It goes from a slow to a full-blown stun. And at a level 4 combat, usually when you're getting into the first objective, you need to hit that tab screen and see if it's Warbringer or if it's going to be Shield Wall.
And by the way, it's a very good chance it's going to be Warbringer.
Very, very high
chance. Very good chance. It actually tells you nothing about which way a variant is going, because I've seen plenty of tank variants still take this talent. Also, the stun, that sucks. It hurts. It's deadly. It's the scariest thing about this. But the insane reduction to the cooldown of the charge ability is also something you need to have in the back of your mind. You're going to be having to contend with Varian's charge pretty much constantly.
Every 6 seconds, he can make this re-engage. What most are going to do, particularly in lower leagues, is charge you. Back up, because they went too deep. But then they're going to dance around for 6 seconds and do it all over again. And by then, you may have gotten out of position thinking that that's still on cooldown. So be prepared for that sort of thing. Another one, Greymane's Eyes in the Dark. This happens at level 4. This is where Greymane disengages, rolls away, and gets stealth. So at level 4, good Greymanes will get in your face more, knowing that they had that sweet 5 seconds to slink away.
Yeah, which has gotten me many a time.
Ooh, it has gone down to 3 seconds due to the recent nerfs. too. So maybe not as scary as it once was.
It's still absolutely catch you off guard. Get a gray mane out when you thought you were going to kill him otherwise. But let's move it up. Let's move the dial, Kyle. Let's move it up to level 7.
Level 7. Here's one I've seen a lot of people die to. Asmodan's March of Sin. Level 7 is when Asmodan can take his hand laser and walk along with it, crab style. If you are not prepared for Asmodan to chase you, to continue dodging abilities while locking on that laser, you will die. And I've gotten many an Illidan with this.
Let's be fair. I think a lot of people die to Asmodan because they're just not used to playing against an Asmodan.
Perhaps. There's a lot of Asmodans right now. He's got a good win rate. His split push is very powerful. So I think we have a lot of new Asmodans.
I only see him in Quick Match.
That is true. He is a very fun specialist. He is one of my main let's relax and stop worrying about body blocks kind of character when it's late night.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, why worry about body blocks? You are a body block. It's his hidden passive ability.
To block all your friends from the choke.
Yep. Falstad's Boomerang is another one you got to watch out for. You know, when that hammer comes.
This is an actual power spike, almost to the degree of, like I said, what we were going to avoid with Chromie, but it does area effect damage all of a sudden, and you may think you barely dodged it, only to die to the side explosion.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can happen on the return as well. So the fact that it's activatable just makes it so dangerous. You know, like you said, your dodge of that thin line is no longer good enough once Boomerang is taken.
And you need to watch out for how he positions himself in the background, because of course it goes out in a straight line, but it returns to him based on where he currently is. So a barrel roll off to the side could bring that Boomerang right across your face, even though you dodged the initial cast.
Yeah, it gives him the opportunity to compensate for your dodge.
Li Ming's Calamity Bill. You always need to be watching for this.
Your favorite thing in the world.
Oh, it's fantastic. Taking a wizard and making them a sort of melee caster, adding some talents to it later that actually makes it a bit more viable and survivable.
Yes,
but
7
is one of my favorite surprise factors.
Yeah, 7 is where it, you know, where you actually get Calamity, right? This is where you add the damage burst to your teleport. Now, it gets scarier at, it's 13, right? Where if you take too much damage, it resets the cooldown on your teleport.
Right, and then also the increased range is what I really like about it.
Yeah, that's where, for me, the Calamity build gets a lot scarier, because Li Mings get way more just carefree about engaging with their teleport. But 7 is definitely where you should be concerned. I just get more scared at 13.
You got to take a little break, see what Li Ming's going at 7. Just because she didn't go Calamity doesn't mean it's not going to be scary. I mean, the Vengeance, Arcane Orb, increasing that damage based on distance. And then we're going to combo that later with Arcane Orbit. You need to see if it's going Seeker, particularly if you're Chetan, if you're someone who really likes standing still. 3 magic missiles hitting you are going to do bonus damage. Always check out Li Ming at 7 and see what she's building up for the late game.
Yeah. Lunara's Nature's Culling. So this is
not as big of a deal as it used to be.
No, but it's still nerfs. Yeah, it's still a 150% increase on Nature's Toxin damage. But this is on non-heroes. So you just need to, I mean, this is just where you got to worry about her wave clear, basically.
Wave clear, her burning the immortals. She's not as powerful before 7, but come 7, a Lunara can absolutely solo that in the background while you were too busy having a fight on Battlefield of Eternity. And also, Nature's Calling does inform a later build with Thornwood Vine, because it's all about spreading around the poison. So you might want to read into it, and you may be able to predict what talent they're going later on. Leaping Strike is a really powerful talent for Lunara to enhance her dual ability on a map like Dragonshire, where she knows you'll want to stand in a certain spot. Braxis would be a good place for Leaping Strike too.
Yeah, I'm so glad you included this next one, because I think we have all been there. We have all been dancing around a Medivh when he has all of a sudden hit us with Arcane Rift and it killed us, and we go, oh wait, what, huh? That was the Master's Touch. It comes online at level 7, and this is the questing talent, where it increases the damage dealt by 75% and cooldown reduction for hitting a hero by 1 second after he's hit 30 heroes with Arcane Rift.
Oh, thank good. It's luckily only 75 damage being added, not 75%. That would be frightening for 30 stacks.
Yeah.
But it's 75 permanently increased. That reduction, though, this is when Medivh makes up for the damage that he originally was lacking. So he becomes a sort of half assassin spellcaster burst dude. You got to watch yourself.
Yeah, it really it starts to hurt. You know, once it's completed, you know, it doesn't happen the second he hits seven. If he does take this, you have to, you know, watch for basically wait for that quest to be completed. But it's rough. It can catch you off guard because if you've been playing against the Medivh, you know, up until whatever level it takes him to actually complete it, Arcane Rift hasn't been doing as much damage. And then all of a sudden just gets a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a buff. And then you also wanted to talk about Aspect of the Beast as the final level seven kind of, you know, spike, the concern, the cooldown reduction on Misha Charge every time she lands a basic attack.
And this isn't probably so much for you personally. If you are a squishy battling Misha, you're probably stutter stepping. You're probably kiting along. You're avoiding getting auto attacked by the bear in the first place. This is really important if you're tanking and if you're tanking against Rexxar. The last thing you want to do in that case is just stand still and wail on the bear and say, I'm helping. Because what you're actually doing is reducing Misha's power slide equivalent. And there's going to be so many over the course of this battle that you may very well lose out.
Yeah. Shall we move it up to 13?
Let's do that.
Let's level up.
At 13, this is where most spell shield talents are. So you need to be aware as a burst character, if you are casting big ol' honking spells, particularly those that come in a single wave or have their entire duration within 3 seconds, you need to be aware that you just got weaker in some cases when you meet a level 13 tank.
Yeah, there's a lot of shared talents at level 13 because you also have to worry about Shrink Ray. You have to worry about Ice Block. I'm so happy you included Molten Block because honestly, I haven't played Cho in so long, I probably would have forgotten it.
But it is his version of it. It's also where all the giant killers are. And these are all really important things to think about. If you're those spellcasters, watch out for spell shield. Don't get your damage reduced for 3 seconds by 50%. Let another lighter ability go out. If you're Kael'thas, put a living bomb on the tank if you really want to blow up a tank in this case, and then cast the pyroblast. Let the Phoenix go out and get its stuff done first, and then follow it up with the big flame strikes that you invested so many talents into.
Yeah.
Shrink Ray is something you absolutely need to watch for if you're Vala, if you're the tank. I often Shrink Ray tanks, particularly in Muradin comps, because it's often squishy in the background. You got Tracer flitting around. You got, you know, just about a lot of light bodies behind this big, big front line, this stun bot of Muradin. But if he goes down, the whole thing falls apart. And sometimes I Shrink Ray that Muradin to lock him down. I Shrink Ray tanks. But that means Sergeant Hammer, of course, because that's great. Tracers, Valas, realize if you're top damage or you're having the biggest impact on the game, be prepared to be shrink raid.
Yeah, absolutely. Dive heroes. I abuse this on Illidans and Greymanes like no one's business.
So yeah.
Keep an eye out for
Ice Block, you got to watch for that. Don't blow your main cooldowns on somebody who has Ice Block, particularly if you've been watching them the whole game and you found them to be quite twitchy, quite good. Mm-hmm. At their character. Absolutely. If they're bad and they take Ice Block, you can probably just kill them.
Yeah. Some hero specific talents to look out for level 13. Lost Vikings can take Jump and become a mini Murky.
Yeah, and you to that point you may have been able to lock him down rather easily. This is going to be a couple of survivability talents like that. Tassadar also gets his dimensional shift, whereas if he takes enough damage and to a low enough health, he will automatically activate that. So chasing Tassadar, which was already not too great of an idea, becomes a really, really bad idea at 13. He's going to lead you away from the fight, and your team might fall in the background because all they're missing is a Tassadar, and you left with all the damage is Vala.
Yep. And speaking of survivability, well, let's talk about survivability through murder with Tychus's That's the Stuff, because all of a sudden his minigun will be healing him for the bonus damage it deals.
Very important to watch out for. Tychus will stand through a lot of stuff that he wouldn't otherwise. It's also important to note that in the most recent build, minigun has been changed back to spell damage. So we'll have to see what sort of effect that has on his win rate.
Good point. Now let's talk about the final level tier you wanted to discuss, which is level 16. Lots of stuff here. Tons. Locust Waves from Abathur, for example.
Yeah, you're almost fully built up. These would be more stacked moments where everything comes together. Abathur's spawning locust now. He's doing three at a time around the map. This is not a big deal early on as he takes a couple of locust towns, maybe increases their health, gives them some ranged attacks. But suddenly at 16, all those talents can come together and you can very much find yourself getting outpushed and locked out of the map.
Yeah. What about Shield Artanis Surge? Yep, there you go. One of the main reasons you kind of think maybe he doesn't need baseline mitigation.
This is a fantastic talent. It increases the amount of shielding he has the second it activates and degrades over time. If something degrades over time, if something has a timed life, you should walk away and let it go away before you re-engage. This is the real level that Artanis is going to get to where people start making mistakes. Before then, Phase Bulwark reduces the damage of abilities by 50%. Big deal if you're a spellcaster. Maybe you're already starting to mess up. Maybe you killed Artanis in the early game and you're just blowing all those abilities. But come 16, you are making a huge mistake by targeting Artanis.
Yep.
If he takes this talent. If he doesn't, now you're informed. Informed aggression. Kill him. He messed up his build.
Yes.
Not to say that that's the only talent they're available for him, but if he's going to solo tank in a quick matchy scenario, you need to watch for this.
Yeah. Ariel at 16, this is an interesting one to keep an eye out for, because not only do you need to be worried about what she takes, but then what she is doing to her fellow teammates after she takes it. This is her Will of Heaven or Wrath of Heaven level, so this will be where she gets her attack speed or ability power buff to whoever she bestows hope upon. So you need to know if she's going for attack speed, if she's going for ability power, and you need to be paying extra special attention to who is getting that crown over their head.
And this might change the way you're going to engage the team. You're not able to see the crown if you are not the recipient or the Ariel, but you can usually tell who it is. If it's a duo queue, obviously, they're probably crowning each other. If this is just a solo game, just watch the Ariel in the early game. You can usually tell who their buddy is. Now they're going to take it 16, 100%. They're going to show you, are they enhancing attack speed? Or are they enhancing spell power, ability power? And that's a 10% increase. So you should really be focusing on either getting Ariel down, which could be really difficult given Aegis, or getting down her main battery that's charging her. Also difficult because of Aegis. Often a strategy to beat good supports is going to be to change targets. Focus hard on whoever you really want to kill. The second that Morales beam comes in that safeguard, you go, and now Morales. Now she burned all her cooldowns. We removed, in a sense, the main character because they're now being healed up. Let's actually take care of that healer now.
Yep. Also, just personal tip, if you queue in and you see a Lunara named Tarrasque and an Aurel named me, run from that Lunara at level 16.
Aw, thank you.
She is getting the crown. Vulnerabilities, of which there are many. Critter Eyes on Brightwing, Northern Exposure on Jaina, Crippling Shot on Nova, Harsh Winds on Samoro, Cold Embrace on Sylvanas, Amplified Damage on Zul. These all can come into effect at level 16. And again, this is one of those things where you should be concerned if you're playing against these heroes. You should also be concerned if you're playing with these heroes, because if they take one of these vulnerabilities, suddenly they're your shot caller. You should be attacking whoever they place this vulnerability on.
The only difference here is Samoro's, his Harsh Winds only affects himself, but himself as in illusions, right? Everyone else.
Not an inaccurate word.
Yeah, everyone else is going to affect the whole team. So Zul's Amplify Damage, it's Bone Prison. Not surprising, but two big old bones come out. What should we all attack, guys? Well, that thing right there. But you do need to watch out for the smaller spell effects, maybe, like Cone of Cold, like a Crippling Shot. Certainly, Cold Embrace, this is Sylvanas' dagger being thrown at. You see it all the time. You need to make a mental switch that she is now using this extremely offensively, not just to lock down a lane minion while you complete the team fight.
Yeah. What about Diablo at level 16, Kyle? What do you get excited about in Diablo?
I know this one's just for me. But I love Domination. You got to watch out for it. You get a cooldown reduction on your Shadow Charge. If you overpower someone, you have an instant Shadow Charge. Diablo's able to lock down people for a very long time. And we're seeing a lot of people combine Diablo's lockdown with a variant snag.
Hmm.
Imposing presence is all over 16s for tanks. This means it did change recently, so be ready for this. It has some rather cool effects now. 20% attack speed slow just for hitting them all the time for 2.5 seconds. You probably don't want that if you're Sergeant Hammer. Don't hit a tank. Check their 16. Look for imposing presence. They can also activate it for an attack speed slow of 50% and a movement speed slow of 20%. Probably if they're in range, it's rather small. The movement speed slow of 20% is what you really have to concern yourself with. If a tank activates this in your face, they're either running away themselves or they're trying to slow you down to kill you.
Yep.
So I think we can all kind of put together here at 16, you should probably stop attacking tanks. Before then, it's okay. If you're Tychus, it doesn't matter. Just go for it, right? But really, we're starting to see a trend here in survivability.
Yep. With the and by the way, stop attacking tanks at 16 with the Into the Nexus asterisk, you know, given without all of the other things of like, oh, well, it's a short kill. Yes, of course. Then attack him. But
real time strategy game. Things are happening all the time. Obviously. Right. Yes. There's always additional elements. You may be fighting four tanks in quick match with one support. Target a tank. You don't have a choice. This is also a level where you might find some surprising abilities getting enhanced in odd ways.
Yeah, things cool that you've spent 15 levels. You spent a good chunk of the game playing against heroes, and you know that their abilities function a certain way, and then all of a sudden they change.
Exactly. Gul'dan's you can see coming from a mile away. You know exactly what spec he's doing. Is he going corruption? Is he going flame? You can put it together and know what he'll pick up at 16, but this will be Ruinous Affliction or Rampant Hellfire. Both are really big jumps in his power, and they apply either dots or enhance himself through spamming, depending on which build he does. Kael'thas, Fury of the Sun, well, a secondary explosion after the first flame strike, which matches the size based on your Verdant Spheres. I stand in this all the time. Accidentally.
Oh, I do too. And I play a lot of Kael'thas, but you know why? I don't usually go the flame strike build.
Flame strike builds are very popular, and if you aren't watching for the 16, that second flame strike is going to show up, and if it's enhanced with a giant killer on it, if two people are standing inside of it, 8% of your maximum health is gone.
It's absurd. Yeah, and this is one of those things that really catches you off guard. Nazebo's Ring of Poison, too. You know, you've been stuck in zombie walls all game long, well, all of a sudden the center is death.
It hurts a lot.
Mm-hmm. Begin him by penetrating around a Rainer all game long. Guess what? Now you're stunned.
That went from a simple push. Now at 16, he can turn it into a stun. And it's a decently length stun, and he can take two charges. He normally does at 13 when he does this build. So that'll give him a lot of lockdown that you didn't expect previously. And this is still a full 1 second stun. You do the push away, so it's harder to hold on to them. I like to push people into walls so I can kind of keep them in range. Otherwise, I'm going to ruin it for myself. But a 1 second stun in this game, if you've been following for the last 6 months, is huge.
It's about as good as it gets at this point. Sundering has been nerfed time and time again. It is now down to 1 second. So Rainer can give himself two charges of a 1 second stun if he specs correctly. And it comes online at 16. So he gets his own little mini sundering that he can use twice.
This is one I see a lot of people get caught in. It's always a surprise when it shouldn't be. It's a very popular talent, Earth Grasped Totem on Rhaegar. 90% slow for the first second after it's cast.
Yeah, you basically freeze and you basically trip up for 1 second.
And that can be enough to get you killed.
Yeah, it's like a soft stun in that way. It's not, you know, you're not interrupting an abilities in any way. They can still attack, but you are not going anywhere for that 1 second. And then you're still stuck in the regular slow afterwards.
You need to watch out for ranges. Ranges can change. Sergeant Hammer's graduating range. Now, this isn't going to catch you off guard as much because it slowly grows over time after Hammer is sieged up. But this is a big power spike for them, and they're usually going to start pushing for keeps at this point. And it is going to be very safe. Graduating range is one of those things that I would say you shouldn't have let it get away in the first place. You are going to lose to graduating range a good majority of the time. You should not have gotten to 16 with a level deficit. You need to be ahead by the time you reach this point.
Strong words.
It's true. It can lock down a whole team. You got Morales healing her too. They got double pushback. You're not going in there. Certainly not as Thrall, not as the tank. Maybe you shrink ray it. Maybe you polymorph it. But Hammer just keeps coming.
Yeah. Rexxar's feigned death. Pretty obvious, just like graduating range. Moving into less obvious territory again, Stitch's fishing hook. You know, the hook has had a certain range all game long, all of a sudden at level 16. He can hook you from real far away.
40% increase. It's really big, and it can definitely throw you for a loop. One that's been in the game for a really long time, but you got to watch out for, particularly if you're in charge of those blinds on Lili or JoJo, Thrall's Tempest Fury. This gives him 3 strikes at the end of his Wind Fury and adds a lot of burst damage to the guy.
Yeah, very popular talent. I take it basically every game I play as Thrall. It's a safe assumption, but again, just hit tab, double check, make sure. And when you see him wind up and start moving faster, it's coming. Watch out for that final third strike.
But when you're in charge of those blinds, you need to make a change. When I see Thrall running at me before as Lili, he lands, let's say he lands as Feral Spirit. I will blind as soon as he gets to me, because here it comes. But at 16, I need to wait for 1 or 2 hits to make sure I blind during the most important part of this ability. Otherwise, we may miss on the casual part, but the burst still rolls through and kills you.
Absolutely. And then finally, I know one of your personal favorites, and one that trips me up constantly, Tyrael's Holy Ground.
This is a really big change to a base ability that he's had all game. This is, of course, that Eldrune's Might, that ends up setting up an area that you cannot pass through. And it constantly catches people off guard. It is the go-to talent at 16. I can't imagine I've seen anything else for a very long time, but it's up against like Blood for Blood, which has lost a lot of its jazz of recent.
Yeah. Yeah. So just be prepared for it. It's such a cool trick.
Manipulating. This is really where he can start stealing bosses. He can basically start operating as Chen with the barrel when you get into bosses and merc camps. You got to be real careful about it.
There was just an extremely loud noise outside that I was muting through.
Ooh.
In case you're wondering. So anyways, there you have it. Kyle's list of power spikes to be concerned about at certain levels. If you want to run through the entire list, you can find it in the show notes for episode 139 of Into the Nexus. And every now and then, I'd like to remind you exactly of how to find those. Go to amove.tv/ITN. Find the corresponding post for the episode you would like to see the show notes of. And they are always linked in full at the very bottom of the episode post. You get to see the notes as we see them, as we type them. And,
by no means a full list. And there are plenty of very tricksy things that you can do. 2 charges of Explodium on Gazlo might trip you up. These are more the things you're going to see constantly.
Yep. Well, let's take it home with an email.
Darkness stopped calling.
Does anyone else hear that buzzing?
Hold on. Darkness just texted me.
You can always send an email or 2 or 3 or however many you would like to itncast@gmail.com. Our email today comes to us from listener Keith, who writes, "Hey, Kyle and Garrett, first of all, love your show. Been listening since the very beginning and you guys are great. I look forward to your show every week." Well, thanks, man. Anyways, my main topic for this email is regarding implementing more Blood Elf characters in Heroes. I know we have lots of Night Elves and Sylvanas, an undead High Elf, and Kael'thas, our token Blood Elf. Who would you guys like to see put into the Nexus? I see what you did there. From the Blood Elf pool. I personally would like to see Lorthamar Theron put in. He has some neat lore, and I think he would be a cool melee warrior. Not sure what his abilities would be. I would give him, but I would love to hear your ideas. Please keep up the great work. Keith.
So I got to let you roll first, because you are a Blood Elf.
I am. I main a Blood Elf Death Knight. Before that, I mained a Blood Elf Paladin for years. But honestly, I don't know, man. There aren't a lot of extremely well-known Blood Elves. I mean, Lorthamar Theron he's barely been on stage in World of Warcraft. Like, you can go and see him in Silvermoon. He shows up every now and then, but he's never really had a big moment.
Yeah. great art though for him.
Oh yeah, he's great. He's
pirate
got
patch and that going on. I mean, he's a cool looking guy, but you're right. It wasn't the horde is broken. Where is Lothamar?
Yeah, I wouldn't know what abilities to give him either, just because I honestly don't know what abilities he uses. If he's like, yeah, he's a warrior, cool. That's as much as I know about Lothamar.
Ranger and paladin.
Yeah, yeah. And we, as much as I would love to see a Blood Elf Pally get in, a Blood Knight of any sort, I mean, Johanna is kind of already filling that role, and she has a Blood Elf skin. Which is kind of the cool
Spellbreaker, which is a great reference to Warcraft 3.
Yeah, which one of my favorite skins, even though I don't own it yet. I really need to buy that. It was on sale, too, and I forgot. Crap. Anyways.
Well, you sadly won't be able to pick it up at a discount price during the Christmas sale. It's rather thin.
It is rather thin. That being said, did I inform you I totally broke down and bought the one-year stim pack?
Nice.
I didn't do it last year, and I regretted it, so I got it this year.
Fair enough. I'm sitting happy on my Nexus stim pack at the moment from the challenge.
Yeah.
Completing some level 10 heroes. That'll be nice.
I'm looking forward to this time next year, seeing how many other free stim packs I picked up. So I see how many days past 1 year I've earned.
That's right. Yeah. You could categorize it for us.
Yeah.
Over the course of the year. You know, they just did a big promotion. I'm sure that was expensive. I can't blame them for keeping things full price when new people are getting into the game. That makes sense as a business, as lame as it is.
Yeah. But I don't know, man. I don't really have anyone because I would like I said, I'd like a Blood Elf Paladin, but we don't need one. We have Johanna. She has a skin. That's kind of the cool thing about it. You know, Heroes of the Storm is that you can just add skins to the game that at least for me, it kind of does give me what I want, right? Like, it's like, well, I just want a Blood Elf Paladin. I don't really care, you know, what the hero is. It doesn't have to be a named paladin. And it's like, well, cool. Well, I can just play Johanna and I can have that visual flair. I will say what I absolutely do want. I still can't believe it's not in the game. I want the undead Kael'thas from the Sunwell Five Man.
Yeah, with the orb in his chest, right, to keep him going.
Yeah. Like one of the shards just pierced through his chest. Like, how is that not a skin? When they announced him, I figured that would be the bundle, right? It'd be Kael'thas.
Right. Yeah.
And death is merely a setback to Kael'thas. I'm surprised.
I think my favorite Blood Elf in the whole darn game is Johnny Awesome.
Oh, Johnny Awesome would be really cool. But again, isn't he? I think he's just a warrior, isn't he?
I think he's just a normal warrior, but like, let's run with it. Like, let's have him die all the time. He was also seen. I found him there in the mission you're doing where you're playing as Illidan in the game. He's one of the party members in the raid.
Yeah. When you, oh man, what a fantastic mission that was. But no, you're absolutely right. He does show up in that and many times throughout all of WoW. But I was trying
to
remember
my favorite Easter egg.
Now I remember. Okay. They're kind of like corrupted evil blood elves, but in Ice Crown, the raid, there was the entire Crimson Halls. I always just called it the Blood Wing. You've got Blood Queen Lanethel and the three princes, Valinar, Kel'Seth, and Tal'Darim. And any of that would be cool as hell because they're super sweet. And the theming there is really cool.
Man, we should get a Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse kind of Lost Viking skin.
Ooh.
They're all Death Knights.
Be the three horsemen.
Yeah, it's only three. I know it's not perfect, but
personally, I'd rather have the three amigos for the Lost Vikings.
Well, if we're talking like wish skins here, everyone knows I want Infested Falstead. Like Total Recall it up, just the bird, and then this tumor out of the back with Falstead's face on it.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah, I guess Lady Liadrin could fill a new role because she's a red paladin, isn't she? I think she's a red paladin. I honestly don't remember, but she's the leader of the Blood Knights. So that'd be interesting.
Do you think the gnomes are happy enough with Chromie that, you know, we can fill out the other races? Are we ready for troll?
I'm not. I don't even like gnomes. But after the pre Legion event and World of Warcraft, where we got to see the leader of the gnomes in his giant mech, I want that in Heroes of the Storm now. Please.
Chris and I just 48 hours ago went through Ulduar for the first time. Is that the name of it?
Ulduar in Northrend?
Yeah.
Yeah, the best raid of all time.
That I completely missed because I graduated college and money and that sort of thing at the time. But wow, what a place.
I didn't miss it and surprisingly graduated college.
It was, I was blown away. That was a cool place. And they had that robot dude, of course, the gnomish robot there at the end that I fought in Hearthstone.
Oh, yeah. Now. He's one of the keepers. Yeah. Like he's like a, not a god, but he was made, he was created by the Titans. So he's kind of a big deal. A lot of the bosses in there are keepers.
And then you go down to the basement and there's Yogg, right?
Yep. Yogg-Saron is there and all the Cthulhu tentacle faces beforehand.
Totally, and running around his mind and stuff like that. That was super cool.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's got your name written all over it. Ulduar is a fantastic experience. But Keith, thanks.
Sounds like the next expansion will have my name all over it, too.
I hope so, if we're going to finally get to go up against N'Zoth. That'll be super sweet. But Keith, thank you for writing in and giving me an excuse to geek out about elves. Something I am always down for.
Oh, you know what? We need a map. Maybe just a brawl, but can we have something like the Blackheart's Bay thing right now where you protect the moon gates and have to escort the meat wagons as the Scourge?
Ooh, that would be really cool. I mean, bring in anything from the Warcraft RTS as a brawl and I'll be happy.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anything at all. Like just get, you know, something that happens around the base of Ice Crown or something. Like.
Yeah, Wrathgate or something. Everyone gets poisoned. Yay! Wrathgate.
The best. Putris shows up. You know, defeat Putris. That'd be great. Sign me up. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks again to our patrons over at patreon.com/ITN supporting us. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Declan H. and Cheesy Bob. You guys are awesome. If you're listening on iTunes, we appreciate the reviews that you all leave. If you like the show, a 5-star review helps us a lot on iTunes to find new listeners. So thank you this week to Just Me. And Jagla Forge, thank you for the 5-star reviews.
Is there a question mark on that?
No, it was just me.
Oh, just me.
I'm sorry for the flourish on my pronunciation. Usually we record the show live Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern. Obviously, we're doing it early this week because of Thanksgiving. So happy Thanksgiving to everyone who celebrates it into the Nexus audience. But you can usually catch us live Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern time on twitch.tv/AMOTV. Follow us on Twitter at ITNcast. And big thanks to Gorath and Brian Griffith for our intro and outro music. It's some fantastic stuff. Kyle, where can folks find you?
You can find me at Kyle Ferguson. That's where you can find Here's the Storm Lessons. You can find my Twitch page, twitch.tv/KyleFerguson, 2 S's in Ferguson everywhere. And this weekend on that Twitch page, Saturday, 2 p.m. Pacific, there will be Team League yet again. This time we will be combining the full forces of Heroes Forge, another show on this network where Kristen and Jeff sit down and create heroes, make them up from listener-submitted emails and off the top of their own heads and compete for the best hero build. Both those guys are going to come on, be part of Team League, and then, of course, we'll have the staples so far anyway. Starting to really enjoy those guys. We got John and Gorath coming back on for that as well.
Fantastic. Well, folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Garrett Art. You can find all of my other podcasts at emove.tv. I would recommend For Azeroth. If you you want to hear more about the Titans who made Mimiron, who resides in Ulduar, we just did a big lore segment about the Titans on the most recent episode, as well as discussed this week's WoW news and, you know, what we're personally doing in the game. It's a good time with me and Jocelyn. Go check that out. That's going to do it for this episode. Again, hope everyone has a good Thanksgiving. Try not to put yourself in too hard of a turkey coma. And until next time, good luck and have fun.
Take care.